Blog Talk Radio.
Lock and load.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-teeny stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Well, good evening.
Hi, Bella.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. I've had a great day at the rigs today. Joe, welcome as well. How are you doing
Thank
this evening?
Thank you. I'm ecstatic. A little disappointed that CPAC didn't call and ask me to give a
Wait a minute! Statement. Wait a minute! No! What did I just get done saying before we went on air?
I'm doing awesome, man.
That just killed me. I said, no, I'm not jumping into politics right off the bat. Right away, you're going to see back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Kill me, Joe. but I also, okay, I might as well chew both of you at the same time for a couple of things. Let's get this right off the plate. It's Sundance, I can't believe you texted me asking for the call-in number to your show.
I had the wrong song. I was at Riggs, I had the wrong phone, and I just made it.
Must I do everything? Please. I have to delegate, which is what I said this morning. And, Joe, you're killing me. As we're leading into the bumper music to start the show, you're trying to tell me the guest name, and I'm like, yeah, like I can hear you, but Joe, you've done an amazing job. Joe handles all of the scheduling of the show, and Joe has a new phone tonight, so there shouldn't be any cricket chirping or dog or popcorn blowing up. Or
Can y'all hear me? Hey, anybody there?
Joe, is that you?
Joe, as long as you don't now, I'm gonna me. I'll be good. As long as you don't.
Can y'all hear me?
As long as you don't gum me to death. I'm not.
Maybe after the show.
I've had a great day. So this is the Bella D'Angelo Show, and Joe, very quickly, let everybody know the guests that we have tonight, because this is going to be a great show tonight. Every night.
All right.
Great, but
I'll give you the brief digest version. Wyatt Cop's coming on to talk about the escalating situation in Ukraine. Secondly, we have David Dot Jr. coming on to talk about his amazing new book. I don't want to ruin it, so I'm just going to keep it very brief. And thirdly, we got Larry Berg reporting from CPAC. It's going to be awesome.
Which, by the way, I was supposed to be at CPAC, but, yeah, I got to work. And one of my company men that I hung out with today, we were watching it briefly, but we'll get to that towards the end of my discussion of my day out at the rigs. Because, you know, I have so much fun. You know, I wish I could say I would call it work, but it's not. So my morning starts out. I'm driving in to put... Did somebody just clear their throat?
No.
Yes, you did.
No.
Don't. So I'm driving in to put diesel in my truck. And, you know, I'm going up to George Patton Jr.'s rig at 11 to have a meeting with the drill bit guy that's going to sell advertising for the radio show. So, you know, I never call for lunch orders. Never. I call for dinner. I'll put my order in for dinner, but not for lunch. And anyway, so I call up there. I also want to make sure that I can go up there and meet the bit guy. So I call, and I said to him, and he said, well, good morning, Red. How was your day? And I said, well, good morning, George. Fine. How is yours? And then I said, what's for lunch today? And he said, are you serious? And I said, yes. And he said, I'm going to prove a point. I said, what's that? He put me on speaker, and he called over to the command center. And I could hear him, and he said, Dustin, he said, guess who's on the phone? Uh-huh. He said, what did I say at 8 a.m. this morning? Uh-huh. I told you that Red would be calling and asking what's for lunch today. And, Dustin, I know you're grilling hamburgers. You better put another one on the grill so that old Red here can have some lunch. And he said, now, who knows you as good as I do out here in this oil field? And I started laughing. I said, well, as long as lunch is prepared, I'll be there. See, that's how it should, that's how it operates. Because Sundance, I know you get the same at the rigs and you go.
Yeah. I got homemade chili today. That's about all I got.
Well, so I run out and I go and see Josie Wales real briefly, and his room is filling up, and I had to get to other places, and so I ran back in. I told him I'd be back. I finished cutting the onion for him, and he said, what'd you do? Put your finger on it and put some jalapeno on it. I needed some of that, and I said, I'll see you. I'll be back. So I can burn him back up to George Patton, and I get in, and, you know, the big guy's there, and I'm explaining the show, right? So we now are syndicated on the 17th. AM 1090 KTGO is the first station to pick us up. Fargo is the next one. 1,000 radio stations. We've got enough room for 16 advertisements per show, 5 nights a week. It's all going to come together, even though when I talked to Charlie at Salem this morning, I said I'm a little bit behind, but given the amount of things that I can accomplish in a short period of time, I am not worried. So George then makes lunch. We had fried chicken, mashed potatoes, gravy, corn. We're sitting there at the table, and I'm continuing to talk about everything that's going on with the show and everything. And then George said, by the way, he goes, I just have to make a mention that Red here has a new financial advisor. Anybody want to guess on this one? And he goes, some of the harebrained things that she listens to, some of these people out here, and then she comes storming in here convinced that it's going to happen, and we know the list of them, right? Where do you want to begin? Sundance, the FEMA camp, the Russians invading, the Chinese invading, you know the drill. Well,
it goes on and on and on.
It depends on who I've been spending my time with and who has had my undivided attention to preach the beliefs and the views and the vision of what's just right around the corner. Well, you know, I just had to say that I did spend some time with a certain company man over a week ago when he sat in his chair poised straight directly at Fox, kind of, you know, rocking back and forth going, it's going to crash, it's going to crash, it's going to crash. I believe that's what led to my phone call to you, Sundance, when I said, I'm beating feet. I'm going to Canada.
You kind of lost me when you said your undivided attention. When do we get that? What did you say after that?
So one of these nights after the show, you got to admit, you guys, and I said this at the table, I said, do you guys have any understanding? I said, you know how much time I spend talking, and I love my company, man. I love my company, man. I've been here for 4 years, and all we talk about is solve the world's problems and talk about what's going on in the country. But I said, you know, depending on their view and way they see things, I mean, I can get pretty torqued up, and then I come home, and then I get on the radio show, which just torques up even more. And so I walked into the grocery store, and George said, no, Red, I'm going to tell a story. He said, yes. He said he met a financial advisor who was so successful in her stint on the Wall Street that she decided to take a short little reprieve and become a cashier at Cashwise. And he looked at me and he said, Red, he said, have you gone to the bank today? He goes, I don't know about you, but I made a transfer of money today and my bank was open. I bet your bank is open. Anybody of you hear any of this? Anybody know what the anniversary of today is? Anybody? Anybody?
No.
Bueller?
Tell us.
Bueller? Well, when I was at the cashier at CashWise a couple of weeks ago now, she looked at me and she said, did you know that the banks are closing in a couple of days? And I said, what? She said, and in her hysteria, she goes, the banks are going to close down. She said, I don't know when they're going to open up. How are we supposed to pay bills? How am I supposed to do this? Where are we supposed to put our money? She goes, this place is going to become a third world country. And she just went over the edge. All you have to do sometimes. I'm getting much better, though. I survived a company man today who I did not scream at. I did not tell him his views were completely wrong. Oh, no. I just simply sat there and politely listened. And then, as I told Wilson when I was coming in, I just grabbed as much duct tape as possible and said, exit immediately. You do not need to be the stupidity patrol. You do not need to call George and say that this person's views were completely, completely off the mark. You do not need to announce to anybody nothing. You do not need to get upset. No, you don't need to. But that evening when she told me, I actually burned home then, and I called somebody and I said, do you know anything about banks closing in a couple of weeks? Well, I Google searched it. I Google searched it. The Great Depression. This is the date back in 1933 when all of the banks closed because they couldn't keep up with the withdrawals of the funds that were happening. FDR closed the banks so that they could try and balance. They had a banking holiday because all the funds that were being taken out. So there's always a little piece to urban legend, and this is why I try so hard to dispel the myths and dispel the conspiracy theory when we come on this show, because depending on who you're talking to or if what you're talking to, you will get a wide range. So I was prepared when I heard some of the conversation today that actually agreed with Obamacare, talked about how the government, when I said the government can't manage anything, then I was told, well, they manage the military, and that's when I said, stop, cease, and assist. And just leave. You're not going to, no. So anyway, but from there, so I told him, I said, look, I said, you just understood. I said, you know, I have been doing my part to make a difference, and you guys, all you company men, which I thank all the time, you have given me a voice. You validate the things that I believe in, what is happening in this country. But again, we can't predict. We don't know. And there's a lot of positive things going on as well, which we will talk about. So when I left George Patton, I went out, and I went to four new rigs today, guys. And nothing makes me happier than opening up the door to a poor, unsuspecting company man that has not met me before.
Oh, Lord.
Well, the second to the last rig that I went into, when I opened the door, the company man was sitting there, and he said, darling, come on in. And I said, do you want me to take my boots off? And he said, no, I've made a big enough mess here all by myself. And I said, you need a cleaning lady? And he said, well, yes, I do. And I just sat down, and I gave him my card, and I explained my business, and then I went right into the radio show. And he said, yeah, what do you talk about? And I said, well, I said, I used to just sit here and yammer on and on and on about the anointed. But I said, now I've changed and mixed it up. And I said, you know what? I gained a lot of attention about a year ago. And I said, what I realized was how much I wanted to give back and talk about my day in the oil field and promote and get people to understand who we are, what we really do. And then we just sat there. Then also CPAC was up, and he was asking who was at CPAC. And I told him, I said, Trump was there. And I said, I really wanted to go. Guys, I really want to meet Trump one of these days. And you know what, Joe? I would tackle you. I would hug and kiss you if you got Trump for me to come on the show.
Is that a threat? I'll do it. I'll find him no matter what now. It's my mission in life. And I'm going to hold it to you.
I want Jeb Bush, too.
Ooh, really?
Because
That's not so hard.
Yes. Yeah. I sat with the company man talking about who are the possible candidates that we're looking at for 2016. And, you know, we all agreed, and it was, you know, when we talk about it, Ted Cruz and Mark Rubio and Ron Paul, I mean, we're so splintered to begin with. We've really got to have someone that's going to be able to somehow pull both of the sides together. I think Jeb would be the guy to do it. But we both agreed, Company Man and I agreed, that Trump would be a good guy. I mean, he's a businessman. And, you know, Huckabee keeps throwing it around that he's going to run, which he also talked about changing the tax structure where it's consumptive tax. Joe, do you know much about that?
Fair tax. I'm all for it because it abolishes the IRS. I'd be ecstatic if they implemented that, and Huckabee wants to do it.
Amen. And I think with the IRS being distracted enough with Lois Lerner right now, maybe they might leave us alone for a little bit. Maybe just for a little bit. But then he said, Ms. Bella, I said, he gave me his work. I'm coming out in a couple of weeks, and my cleaning crew, we're going to clean his shacks. And said, Ms. Bella, it was very nice meeting you today. And I said, sir, it's very nice meeting you, and I look forward to coming back and visiting with you. And I said, here's how you can listen to my radio show. And he typed it in his computer, and then he said, I want to put it in my favorite. And you know what, guys? That's the stuff that makes my day. And I just kind of teared up a little bit, you know, because normally I'm the one grabbing their computer and putting in the favorites. But, you know, this young man did it, and he hadn't even listened to the show yet. And then he brought the page up, and then he went to the intro, the bumper music, and I paused it, and I said, if you don't mind, you can listen to it when I leave. And then you can click on contact, and that'll send a direct email to us here at the show. You can give comments, questions you would like to ask. By the way, the call-in number, holy, we already have a whole bunch of callers sitting on the screen. They're a little bit early. And my cell phone's ringing. Come on, everybody wants to talk to me at once, first of all.
You're in demand, girl.
We got a 218 number, which is Minnesota. I don't know who this one's gonna be, but we've got another.
Let him have it.
Hang on, 218. I'm gonna pick you up in a second. But he put me in his favorites, and I said, send me an email. Let me know your comments, your questions, your feedback, because this radio show is for us here in the oil field to dispel the myth of what the rest of the world thinks we're all about, because we are the best people in the world. And I tell my story of being out in the field because I love you guys, and you've made me who I am, my business, my radio show. So I left that rig, and I went to the next one, and the company man was, I could see that he was laying down, and so I just turned, I put my head around the corner, I said, I'm just going to put my card here. He said, no, that's okay. And he got up, and I said, no, really, you don't need a salesperson. I said, I'll leave. And he goes, no, that's fine. And he said, what you got? And so I gave him my card. I explained that I've been cleaning for another one of his rigs for about a year and a half. And you know what? We just had one of those good conversations again, just sat down, talked about what's going on in the world. And I looked at him, and I said, you know what? We got to pray. We can't predict what's going to happen. Nor could we have predicted 9 years ago that we would be where we are here today. But there's a lot of good going on. And I said, the thing is that the regular media, oh, no, I lost the 218 number. Dang, I wanted to talk to that one, too. 218, call back. Normally it shows, I don't know, maybe that ripping about Minnesota stuck or something. Well, anyways. But but
it was me.
I said,
my new phone had a Minnesota number.
Minnesota. And then when you have a hope, you have to hold it in your hand and you have to spread it around. And, I don't even complain about the regular media because we are the new media. And we're here to talk about the things that are happening, the positive things that are happening in this country, you know, the positive things that are happening here in North Dakota. And I told him, I said, when I told him that I was the voice for the oil field and I explained about the producers coming out wanting to do a reality show, here, I got to pick it up. I'm dying to know. 218, welcome to the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Yes, hi. How you doing there? I don't know if anybody mentioned anything about the Keystone Pipeline. I was wondering what's going on with that. The latest kind of saw in the news a while back, and it seems like they're almost kind of fudging on it. Obama might be actually signing up with it, or they're just waiting for something else. Do you know anything about it, by chance, Angelica?
Sir, Sir, first of all, where are you calling from?
Minimal, Minnesota.
In what town? I'm sorry.
What town? Duluth?
Yes. Duluth, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. What's
yeah.
your name, sir?
Lou Daniels.
Lou Daniels. How did you find this show tonight?
I was looking at the Blog Talk, and I was pretty interested in it. So I was checking it out.
Have you listened to this
anyway,
show before?
No, actually, first time. First time.
Well, thanks for calling in. The Keystone Pipeline. Well, I can tell you that our anointed, our government's doing everything that it can to possibly stall out the pipeline. There was some legislature that was put in place in Nebraska that stopped it. And every time we get a step forward in the pipeline, then we also get a step backwards. And
I wonder why those politicians don't actually lay out all the states and show how much work, how many people be put to work, how many people be staying in hotels, renting apartments, actually creating jobs, and not to mention, the price of oil. But I would think, they always got these 10-minute bleeps. They try to get elected with that, and they depend so much on the media. I was just curious, why can't somebody actually lay it out, all the millions of dollars, billions of dollars it would make, and all those people, could be separate states could actually bid on laying it out and digging it up, and just think of all the workers and the hotels and,
Well, sir, you make a very good point. And one of the things that this country needs to get back to is state independence and breaking away from the federal government, because as we can see, the federal government has done nothing but completely further shove this economy and industry into the ditch. I don't know if you know much about me. I'm actually from Minneapolis, and I don't know if you know that I'm in the oil fields of North Dakota, and I left Minneapolis because I spent my last 10 years there selling in the manufacturing floor and watching as they were sending all the business overseas. And nobody in Minnesota would listen to me and my views and what I saw that was happening and what was coming along. But nonetheless, I'm here now, been here for four years in the oil field. And, you're giving me a very good idea moving forward on the show. I think it's a great idea, Joe, is that we take it state by state and we take a look at the state of each state as far as jobs and growth, the reality of financials, where they're at. And you make a very good point to also show where the, I've said this, where the other oil plays are. The bottom line is this administration isn't anything about moving this country forward. All it is about is turning this country into the socialist, communist world to give it to those that do not have, to take from those that do. It is class redistribution of wealth.
Right, but don't just to dig in. Lay it out and be independent. They're all sovereign. I mean, what I know about this country, the USA is a corporation. The federal government just kept growing, growing, growing. But originally, they're all sovereign states, and they had to do their own thing, and the government just came in a bit bigger. The federal government, originally 13 states united to fight the British, something like that, But the point is, if I was governor, I would just simply lay it out. They're worried about all this environmental. It's great for the environment because, we'll be saving a lot of those.
Let me ask you something really quick. Hang on one second. You got to let me jump in.
Yeah.
So you're in Duluth. Let me ask you, are you working?
No, unemployed.
Unemployed. What were you doing when you were working, sir?
Mostly I was contracting.
You're
contracting,
a contractor?
More construction.
There, now
stuff
I can
like
hear
that.
You. Construction. Okay, how long have you been unemployed?
Oh, goodness sake. Pretty much spotty here and there. There was a little work here and there, very little contract, and I even had to do work for other people that it's pretty much 5 years.
Hey, you know what? I got to ask you to listen. I need to ask you to put the phone closer to your mouth like it just was because you're really muffled.
I can't stay very long, though. I had to. I'm outside now.
Let me ask you
this. Somebody's got a flight, huh? I'm sorry.
How long have you been unemployed?
About 5 years. I mean, I've had a little spotty employment here and here.
What have you been doing in the 5 years?
I'm telling you, once things drop out, then you got to re-energize, reinsure, find the people again. See, the
right,
people
go out.
Right.
Let me ask you something. So, have you worked at all? Hang on. You got to answer my question, sir. Where have you been working at all in the last 5 years? Just unemployed the whole 5 years.
No, not the whole 5 years. I said it's been spotty, meaning here and there, slim pickings. You know,
okay, let me ask you something. Do you know anything about the oil field in North Dakota and how many jobs we have out here?
Well, it's too cold. I'm already getting out of there here, wherever I'm going, further south, getting nice and warmed up.
Hey, thanks for calling tonight. I appreciate a call in from Minnesota, and I just proved my point. God bless America. Why do I say, you know, how long did I spend in Minnesota? And I moved out here, right? I moved out here 4 years ago. When I got out here, I had company men that looked at me and they said, what are you doing here? And I said, I would rather be cold with money in my pocket than warm and broke. You know, I have so many contractor friends that I knew I no longer speak to. From Minnesota, can you believe that guy's 5 years unemployed, calls in, wants to talk about politics and state independence and what can they do to talk about jobs and creation and everything. But you hand them a job, and you say, do you know anything about North Dakota? Too cold.
Here's your sign.
Hey, Joe, buddy. Joe.
Yeah. I'm right
Thank
here.
You for finding him. I'm sure you found some foot dragger and said, you're from Minnesota, call her. You will get her wound up so tight, I'm going to send you a bonus. No, but really,
wait till he sends a selfie.
Pictures sold separately. Selfies sold separately. Not included.
Guys, but all reality, let's go back to, again, this is why I say that a conservative or Republican from Minnesota is now, Geez, I just talked to one and I got the disease back. We got to stop it. We got to stop it right now.
Yes, we do.
We know how to cure Yankees.
They're not conservative. They do not stand behind anything that they sit in there and they bitch and complain about. I mean, first of all, I can barely hear him. I want to ask him if he was in a bar. But then to talk about that he's been unemployed for 5 years, yeah, I'm sure you have been because the construction, you know, collapsed over 8 years ago. And then he's talking about reinventing himself and this and that. And the next thing, before I muted him, you know he's collecting unemployment. You know he is. And we, you know,
get him.
I know. Because this is, take it. This is the problem with this country. You see, you have these people that stand falsely behind a belief. They believe that they believe in this country. They believe in their own mind that they understand entrepreneurialism, capitalism, and work ethic. But when it comes down to it, all you have to do is ask a few questions. Did you notice that, guys? I let him go for a little bit on his rant, and I know where he's from, and I knew exactly what he was going to say when I put him on the spot. Joe, we got an 817 number calling.
Okay. Give me one second, and I'll predict the future.
817, welcome to the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Hey, guys, this is Chuck. Joe, take me into the green room whenever you get a minute.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. I'm behind. I was getting my other show going. I've got two guys running a show on another platform of mine. So
Chuck, I don't know how to I've got the display. I'm just going to put you on hold. Are you joining us later? Or are you just...
Yeah, reckon.
Here, I'll just mute you real quick. Joe, you've got to... Don't confuse me. I can only handle so much until we go over to Salem, but I think Chuck's on later because Wyatt's coming in at 7:30, right?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway.
Yes. Well,
this is perfect, though, tonight. I need, you know what, because I talked about this with the last company man today when he asked me where I was from. And you know what, it just gets under my skin, guys, whenever I get asked where I'm from, and I have to admit that I actually did time in Minnesota. And then anybody that really knows me looks at me and says, How did you make it? How did you survive out of there? It wasn't easy. There was a lot of pain. Not on my part. Well, yes, it was on my part because I had to actually speak to them, but they actually got the brunt of pain. I believe that this is Wyatt. Let's see if we can pick him up. Wyatt. 419, welcome to the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Hello.
Hello.
This is David Dott in Defiance, Ohio calling.
Welcome,
are
David.
You there?
How are you this evening? Yes, I am
fine.
Here. How are you this evening?
Fine.
Good. Greetings from the love of crude here in North Dakota. Do you know much about what's going on in North Dakota and the oil boom?
Yeah, I heard about it. Sounds like you got a possibility of having something there for a change instead of just cows and grass.
Well, we've had multiple booms out here, but this one's been going strong for quite a few years. But thanks for calling into the program. How did you find out about the show, and what would you like to talk about tonight?
I did a Facebook thing, and I talked to Butler, and he said I should give you a call. So I said, okay, I'll give her a call. We can talk about my book. So John and I talked about my book for a while, and they said, "Yeah, go for it." So he said, "Give me the phone number." He says, "Call in." I says, "Okay, I'll do that."
Okay, we just got the guest line up a little bit. The schedule turned around, but anyways, welcome to the show, sir. Thank you for coming on. You wrote a book. Joe told me a little bit about it. Go ahead and tell us about that book.
Well, it's called The Dragon Awakens. It comes from a statement that Napoleon made when he was asked about China. He says, "Let the dragon sleep, for when it awakens, the world will tremble." So I said, "Well, that's easy. I'll just call it Dragon Awakens." It's very simple. You can make it as simple as this. China is going to attack India with a million-man army so it can go all the way to the oil fields in the Middle East. India is in the way and must be dealt with. The reason they're in the way, it would be able to cut their logistics. So they have to, they can't leave India just sit there. So they have to take them out first. And they're betting that the world won't give a rat's behind because, first of all, we're a Christian nation. Other countries don't care about Hindus anyway. And they're always impoverished and we're always, sending them money to anyway, so if they get taken out, it's no big loss to the world as far as the world is concerned. But the thing is that you have to take them out, and so I had to. The thing is, I had this idea, but I had to figure out the logistics, and that was really hard to do. I spent 2 years just researching the military capability of China and what our military capabilities were, and then I had what India's military capabilities were and where those military assets were located and how so forth and so on. And I had to read CIA reports and Naval Institute proceedings and all kinds of things on the Internet, and I have an entire military library of my own of over 20 books. So it gives me a whole background, and then I being an ex-Navy veteran, that helped a lot. So I served the Navy.
And let me slow you down 1 second. Hang on 1 second.
Yeah.
Let me slow you down. And I realize the schedule got turned around a little bit, but earlier driving in, when Joe told me about you, that's why I asked Chuck to join the show. And, Chuck, I apologize. There must have been just a miscommunication about the time of and the lineup. But
I'm sorry.
First of all,
No. I knew I was
no,
early.
No, we're,
I was just...
No, we're all, it's all good. It's all good. You're still dealing with, you know, I'm technically retarded, and it's amazing I even run the switchboard. And when, but, you know, it's okay because I'm getting syndicated, and finally someone will manage this whole thing so I'm not on an iPad and a cell phone. But, sir, if you would give me a little bit about your bio real quickly so people can know who you are, and then Chuck, you as
okay.
well, and then let's go back into the conversation of this, of your book,
okay.
your series.
I'm a retired GM UAW journeyman. My job was to write computer programs that determined the dimensional integrity of the tooling and or parts for GM powertrain division. And I did that for over 25 years. And I became senior journeyman. I retired. When I got done, I decided I got to have something else to do. So I decided to take up writing and... So that's what I've been doing with. Some things are humorous, some things are not. I started out writing for letters to the editor and that kind of thing. And then in 2012, I actually ran for the United States Senate in Ohio. But I allowed myself $3,000. I got 5% of the vote. My cost per voter was 0.0678 cents per vote. I was in a debate with all the other candidates, and I won the debate. And every time I had a group debate, I usually won the debate. But I couldn't be everywhere, and I didn't have enough money to really do what I wanted to do. So somebody else won, and I realized when they won it that they were going to lose that Senate seat. And they did. They lost it to Brown, a Democrat from here in Ohio. I'm married, have two kids. I have six grandchildren. As I said, I'm a Navy veteran. I served on the deck, was leading seaman of a deck division, and then transferred to navigation division, became a petty officer. So when you read in the book the various aspects of which are involved in how things are done in the Navy and the conversations between officers and enlisted men, how they're addressed and the protocols and all that kind of stuff. Those are all dead nuts right on. There's no mistakes there.
First of all, let me thank you for your service. Hold on one second. I want to thank you for your service, sir, and I want to get back into your theory. But real quick, Chuck, give us a little brief bio about yourself.
Well, I got out of the Navy, went to art school, became a graphic artist. And that gave me some interest in the blueprints. And when then I got into art directing on a television station, Saginaw, that gave me deadline time management sort of thing. And then I got into introduction into the computer system, and where I had to learn four or five different computer languages. And I worked with the same CAD system that NASA uses. And so McDonnell Douglas CAD, then it became EDS CAD, and then it became Hewlett Packard CAD. And each one of those variations, they kept up with upgrades. And we were forever going to school and doing whatever it was we did. But we programmed robots that went around and touched the part all over the place. And then it would tell us what it was, and then we'd transfer it to a drawing. And it would print the drawing and tell what the dimensions are and apply a tolerance that the company agreed to. So that's, it was all mathematics, and which I got in the Navy from navigation. So that's been my life for the last 25 years. Out of the 35
years.
Well,
we're honored to have you.
Yeah.
Honored to have you on here tonight, and I got to admit that through your theory on China, and, it's a little over, I will say it is over my head, but I'm glad that Chuck is here, and I'll sit here and kind of listen, and if you'll go back into kind of your theory and where you left off, and then we'll have a little bit of a round table here.
Okay. Well, it's just that I explain in the book in a nice way, okay? I make it, you're in each chapter, you're in four or five different places at the same time. And each one of those groups doesn't know what the other one's doing or thinking or saying. And as this progresses chapter after chapter, you realize that something that was key points were made along the way. And each time, it finally comes to the point where the president realizes something's going on and what is he going to do about it. And if he finds out, and the rest of the, and if he, everybody else finds out that he knows, then people are going to be dying like crazy. So he has to come up with a plan to maneuver people around without making a big fuss about it. That's the key, so that nobody realizes, well, you know, this ship is supposed to be going, coming home. This ship is supposed to be going here. These ships are in the, you know, in the Caribbean doing this, and this ship, these ships are in the Mediterranean doing that, and so forth and so on. It's just, you know, it doesn't seem like there's anything going on, which gives the Chinese and the idea that the United States is not aware of what they're up to. And little by little, you know, the forces are put together, and in the middle of it all, they manage to break the logistic chain of the Chinese. And that was key to the ending of this whole mess. That's the key. You had to break the logistic chain, and that was accomplished. But every weapon system I mentioned in there and described is available, both on the Chinese side and on the American side. And every there's no secret weapon. There's no, you know, ray gun that somebody, you know, comes out of the woodwork with at the last minute. None of that nonsense. This is off-the-shelf technology available today if it had to be used. And so that's how I made it. I hate books where they come up with, somebody pulls out a secret weapon. And that, to me, that's the cheap way of doing things. You got to figure out how to do with what you've got, and you have to know what you've got before you can even start writing a book about something like this. It could be that serious. So for women, there's a women's story in here too. There's the daughter of a major city who's captured by the Chinese and is rescued by some recon Marine unit, and she falls in love with one of the Marines, and then she has to confront her family because she had to sexually submit and to stay alive, and she comes from a very prominent family, and this would just devastate her. And then she's decided also to become a Christian, not because of the fact that her boyfriend, who is now a Marine, happens to be Christian, but because she had an epiphany. And then there's that story. There's a nice love story. They get married, and they have the whole thing is in there. That's the, you know, and then there's another story, which is the Navy SEALs accidentally run into 9 little boys, little children, and they rescue them. And then they manage to get them, and she takes them under her wing, and she decides that her and her family are going to see that they get brought up correctly and taken care of, because their families have all been murdered. And so that there's that story too. So it's a bunch of things, but every piece of it is a part of a puzzle, and it all comes together.
Why don't you let people know where they can find your book?
It is on Amazon.com. It's only 300 pages. But it's full of information, and the story, I think, is interesting and will grab your attention and keep your attention. The epilogue has to do with Billy Mitchell, the general who got kicked out of the Army Air Corps, and he wrote a book in 1923 where he said that the Japanese would attack Pearl Harbor and the Navy fleet in Pearl Harbor. And Japanese fleet would launch aircraft north of the Hawaiian Islands, and they would attack at an early Sunday morning. And this book was written in 1923, and everybody laughed at him. And then in 1941, everybody stopped laughing.
Laughed at Romney when Romney said that Russia would be the threat, and here we sit here today. But I got to jump in here. Chuck, do you have some questions for this gentleman?
No, except we need to reiterate what the name of the book is so that people can find
it. The Dragon Awakens. That's the name of the book. The
okay.
The thing is, to me, it's almost scary how real it is. Somebody once said to me, Dave, it's almost prophetic. I said, well, it is in a way. But I hope I'm wrong. I mean, if you look at China, you say to yourself, you know, why would they do that? And you say, well, if you really look at a topography map, you realize that 70% of the doggone ground is worthless. It's either mountains, it's either deserts. You know, it's the most uninhabitable place you want to live. And so they're importing rice from us and rice from Vietnam. They're buying oil under price oil from Venezuela. They're blackmailing Indonesia. They're getting the price oil under cost too.
How are they blackmailing Indonesia?
They've got
by making a business
the same way
deal?
They're also blackmailing Philippines.
How?
They are blackmailing the Philippines.
How?
How? But because they have nuclear weapons and that's it.
So do we. So
we
do
don't,
everybody.
That's the thing. That is the thing. We don't want to use them. And that's
they
the
do?
Key.
No,
they
wait.
Don't
we're
care.
Going on some, we're going,
hey,
we're going,
hey,
oh, don't,
David.
I don't believe
David.
They care. If
don't,
they,
you
if
don't
they lose
believe
a few billion
care.
People, so what?
David.
They got how many? 2 billion?
If you take out Beijing, they care a lot because that's where their butts are, the leaders.
No.
You know, it's only the
well,
leaders in the country
when,
that matter.
Yeah, well, they don't really
okay,
care that
let me
much.
Ask you this. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
These premises that I'm hearing here. How many places is China at war right now?
None.
Okay.
Can I show you
how many places?
Book?
Wait a minute. How many places is Russia at war right now? Other than Crimea,
right.
If you want to call that war.
You want to call it war. That's it. Crimea only. Crimea.
No. I'm saying where other than Crimea,
nobody.
which was part
right.
of Russia, you know, for a long, long time. And it's a strategic port right on their borders.
I understand that. You're right.
Okay. So, no.
Why don't,
Russian,
they, why don't they use
Chinese
nuclear weapons for whatever reason? They're going to. The Communist Party in
hey,
China
David,
is
David.
Going to collapse.
Okay.
David,
let me finish here.
Okay.
They're currently not at war with anyone. Now, can you tell me how many places we're at war?
All over the place.
Can you even tell me? Exactly. And so the evil Chinese and the evil Russians? The facts don't seem to line up with what you're saying.
Oh God, yes they do.
How?
The Chinese, Chairman Mao figured this out back in the 50s. The Chinese population is going to outstrip its ability to feed its. They have to go to war to expand their base, and they don't consider. And they consider the loss of life to be a expense that they're willing to pay.
Oh, I won't argue that the
if they throw
I won't argue
the economy
that the
collapses and they
hey,
can't feed
hey,
the people.
Hey, wait a minute. Let me jump
what?
In here real quick, David. When
okay.
you're going to make a point, and I gotta, you know, I'm sure you haven't listened to this show before, but the show is not of 30 minutes of you know going on
preaching,
and on and on.
Right?
I want you to make it. What okay. I want you to do is make your point, and then let Chuck make his point. Because this
okay.
isn't a 30-minute monologue, so make your point, and then
right.
Chuck can make his point. Great.
We have plenty of time. You know, let him talk. That's okay. I want to understand what the man's thinking is, so let him have some air time. Here's the thing. We can look at things from a, for lack of a better term, right at the moment, a xenophobic or a nationalist point of view, a patriotic point of view, where America is, you know, the greatest country on earth. Well, everyone likes to think that. I'm just having a real problem, and I'm a veteran from a long line of veterans. I'll lay out my patriotic pedigree if somebody wants it. But I have a problem with we are using the gun to do business, to keep a dead currency alive, the euro and the dollar,
mm-hmm.
and we are doing violence to countries to loot them for their natural resources and to keep them under the petrodollar and in central banking systems. Right now, there's this big standoff in Crimea. And the fact of the matter is, it was a coup. It was an
mm-hmm.
absolute coup. An elected government was displaced by Western-backed factions, which now came out today in tapped phone recordings, which I have downloaded on my computer so they don't disappear, that the snipers that were supposed to be being done by the evil elected government, it was done by the people who are now have taken over.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, it gets really complicated, but for me it's pretty simple. I just stand back far enough to look at the facts. I take that flag out in front of my face, and I look at the facts. What
yeah,
are we
no
doing?
There's no difference what happened in Croatia and what happened in, let's say, Egypt. They're almost identical, really. There were military. The military did not want to go to war against Israel, so they toppled the government. Russia didn't want to give up its bases in the Crimea, and so they toppled. You know, they did whatever they had to do to keep it, keep their bases. And
let's not so willy-nilly assume that the Chinese, who are very wise people. They really are.
They don't have.
There's racial differences between the races. Let's just face that as a fact, without calling each other racist or anything.
They don't have what
we consider, you know, the great love for human life.
No.
However, if they have an overpopulation problem, they just starve out a few million. But to say that they don't care about throwing nukes around. Wait a minute, the leadership of every country knows that who are we going to try and get? The leaders of the other country. Wiping out population does not win wars. Wiping out their military and their leadership does. I don't think Beijing, you know, wants us to turn, you know, into nuclear rubble, you know, Beijing.
Nor does
Russia. But we are provoking these things. We are over there. They're not over here. Look at Africa. China is doing business. They are buying,
they are
building, they are hiring people. We are pointing guns at people.
We have a law that says that you can't bribe a foreign dignitary in order to do business in that country. China has no such law. Yeah.
Really? Oh, we have that law. We do. I'll tell you what, would you like to come on my show one of these days, and I will show you where we have broken that law so many times, and they don't care.
It's a law, exist.
So you assume we're following it? Come on, man.
Compared to China, China just goes in, bribes whoever, takes the natural resources, and hits the road with them. That's what they're doing in Africa.
Don't we?
I don't know, but the law is there that says they can't do it.
Law can say one thing. What our government does is another.
That's true.
Now, let's get real here.
I'm just kidding.
As an example, let's just take Saddam. I mean, he was our great buddy for a very long time. Why did he suddenly become a tyrant? I tell you why. Because he started trying to sell his oil for the euro and was considering selling it for the yuan. All of a sudden, he was an enemy of America and a bad guy and a tyrant. Look how he's treating his people. How many lies did they tell us to get into that war? Tell me one thing they told about him that in retrospect has turned out to be true. Weapons of mass destruction, debunked.
No. Wait a minute. Stop right there. That's not true. Let's keep the numbers simple. Yeah, let's keep the numbers simple. Let's say he had 1,000 tons of something bad, and he told the world he had 1,200 tons. All right? And the UN went in, and they got found 1,000 tons. And they said, give up the 200. And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. And so then we put embargoes in place. After we invaded and captured him, they asked him about the 200 tons. He says, there weren't any. I said, well, how come you told everybody that that there were.
Bluff.
It was a bluff. Why bluff? He says, because I'm scared to death those crazy turban-head Iranians. If they found out I didn't have anything, their army would just sweep across Iraq and take the country. So by telling them I had 200 tons of this stuff, I kept them at bay. So he said, then they asked him, okay, what about the nuclear stuff? And he says, we don't have a nuclear program. So did the Army give up on that, or did the government give up? No, they ran all over the doggone country and found 400 to 500 tons of uranium yellow cake, which was secretly shipped out of Iraq and sent to Canada and turned into fuel, nuclear uranium fuel rods, whatever you want to call those things.
Fuel rods, not fuel weapons
rods.
Grade.
And you can Google that, and you can find all that.
Whoa. Fuel rods that's are fuel. Not weapons grade, okay?
No.
So
they
didn't have the right
to. Yellow,
didn't
the yellow
the right
cake is not. No. And then if you buy the movie, you get the movie, the super gun, you'll see the delivery system from a Canadian-born
deliver what?
Engineer.
Nuclear, deliver, wait a minute. Deliver what? You said you sent it to Canada. Canada is supposedly one of our friends.
The super gun was designed by a Canadian guy who became an American citizen who was paid by Saddam Hussein to build this gun, which was an enormous thing, the largest gun in the world, at a 45-degree angle, pointed at Israel, and that was the delivery system. He made a minigun, which is a half size, and it worked, and they were building the big one, and the parts were being, they told the Western world, this is before the embargo and all that other stuff, that they were making high-pressure natural gas pipelines, and they were putting them all together
it,
to make a real long barrel.
You're talking about, wait a minute, let's get this straight here. We're talking about a great big gun, okay? It's stationary.
Right.
It's easily taken out. You talk about Israel, when you talk about Israel, you're talking about the eighth most powerful military government in the world.
I understand that, but they still killed it.
Now,
and they
who is aggressive towards its neighbors all the time.
I know.
Okay, let's face it, Israel
and
is not
Israel
a peaceful
found out
nation.
About it. And they released the information, embarrassed the British government because the Brits were making the barrels for it.
Wow, somebody else is building weapons. My God, oh no, somebody else is building weapons.
Built the barrels, telling everybody that they were exporting pipeline materials for
what's your
big
point?
Pipe.
They were building a big gun, so what? A big gun that goes
they're
bang
gonna
and
point
sits
it
one
at
place
Israel
and taken
it. So what happened to the engineer? They assassinated him. Now, who assassinated him? Was it Israel or or was it Iraq? So they didn't have to pay him off the millions of dollars.
Well,
I
mean, we're
but
trying to get Israel to quit killing the Iranian scientists now. You know, Israel, pretty much openly admits that they're assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists. But that's okay because it's Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, right? That's okay because it's
that's
Israel.
It
they can assassinate people, so that's okay. Don't
when
you see the hypocrisy of what you're saying?
They protect themselves as best they can.
Oh, and what about if Iran decided, since we're trying to provoke a fight with Iran, with Syria, with Russia, if they assassinated a few of ours, you'd react badly to that, would you not?
Well, they would.
You don't see your own hypocrisy here?
I'm surprised, if I don't know what the Israelis think of Obama. I figure they don't.
I don't care what the Israelis think. I'm an American. I don't get wagged by Israel.
Well,
Israel's problems are Israel's problems, not America's problems.
Everybody knows that the, what do they call that, their group? I want to say Assad, but that doesn't sound right. Mossad?
Mossad.
One of the prime ministers
was do you know what Mossad's motto is? Do you know what Mossad's motto is?
Hold on, you guys. Hang on one quick second. Hold on, both of you. I've got a caller here that wants to join this discussion, and I think he's got a question for Chuck, but hang on. 267 area code, welcome to the show. What is your name, sir?
My name's Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hey,
thanks
Brian.
For calling in tonight. Brian,
hello, Brian.
Got Chuck and David.
Join in.
Hi.
This is a friendly conversation. Join on in there, Brian.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Brian,
I mean, I have to tell you, I have a much different interpretation. What I've seen is that the issue with Russia and China seems to be that the Russians and Chinese are nationalists. They don't want to be a part of this New World Order empire, which is essentially the Anglo-American establishment. And it's nothing new. I mean, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, Hitler, Stalin, all these other people tried to create empires. And Russia and China, for whatever their flaws might be, and whatever we might not like about Putin, and whatever we might not like about China, they're nationalists. So as they become more powerful, they kind of want to chart their own course. And with Russia and the thing in the Ukraine, the establishment got mad because the president in Ukraine wouldn't take the bailout austerity package from the IMF, and because they want NATO to extend all the way to the former Baltic republics of the Soviet Union, thus threatening and encircling Russia. So I don't see Russia and China as the aggressors here at all. I see it as the establishment wanting to create an empire, and I think that's very clear cut. That doesn't, you know, and that doesn't mean by saying that that you think Putin's a wonderful person or that you agree with everything in China. But I mean, I think it's very clear that the goal is to create an empire, and because the dollar's weakened through the offshoring of jobs in the middle class, what they seem to be trying to do is to make other parts of the world unstable so that those countries and their currencies will be less attractive for investment.
Yeah, George Soros would love that. Would love that.
Thereby propping up the
it.
Dollar and the pound.
Yep. I agree with that. The thing is, whole thing could have been avoided in that area of the Ukraine if they'd have just told the Russian, they've been paying some sort of per diem for those naval bases, and they just say the same per diem would be the same, and there'd be no problem. And tell the Russian people that were living in that part of the country, they look. You have a look at the choices you have. Look at the quality of life that you have in Russia versus the quality of life in Europe. And we want to bring that quality of life in Europe to the Ukraine. Now, I know you may love the nation of Soviet Union, but think about the quality
Stop.
Of life for you and your family.
Stop.
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 Why?
Just a minute. Do you realize that that Crimea, which is the real sticking point here at the moment, okay, is an autonomous nation in itself, okay?
It was in alliance with
Ukraine prior. It was in alliance with Russia, and they just voted today to join Russia.
Well, that's their
because they did look at it and say, do we want a dead money? Do we want to fall into the same trap that all of the Western countries did when they joined the Euro? And they constantly have to have a new parasite. You know, the parasite has to have a new host, so they're trying to grow.
Behind the euro was good. The problem is everybody went on a socialist buying agenda with the IMF, where they borrowed money from the IMF.
The idea with the euro was to basically abolish the sovereignty of these countries and put the power in the hands of unelected bureaucrats and preferred, you know, favorable corporations. And the reason why the Ukraine turned down the bailout package from the IMF and the European Union and went with Russia was because Putin offered a better deal. Now, what they want to do now that you have these puppets in power, is they want to accept the conditions of the bailout from the IMF, which is going to mean much higher fuel and food prices, and which is going to mean a Greek-style austerity, which is going to mean higher unemployment, higher taxes, less social services. I mean, it's going to decrease the quality and standard of living by 20% to 30%, and it's happened all throughout Europe now. You have in Italy, for example, you have three straight prime ministers that weren't even elected by the people, the so-called technocrats. So it's the European Union's parasitical. And the idea that they would get a better deal from the EU is preposterous. No, they wouldn't get a better deal from the EU, and that's why they didn't want to accept the terms of the IMF bailout. And basically what the IMF said, which is controlled by the Anglo-American establishment, well, we can do this the easy way. In other words, you can just accept the terms and conditions of our loan, or you can do it the hard way, which means we're going to fund a color revolution backed by all kinds of extremist groups and overthrow your democratically elected government. So it's got absolutely nothing to do with
this
whole
thing. Hey, everybody, hang on. Hold on. You got to let me back in. This is the Bella D'Angelo show that you're listening to, and the call-in number, if you'd like to join us, 760-259-2312, 760-259-2312. And I got to break it up a little bit because it's gotten awfully – we're having a good discussion. But, guys, I want to ask you guys, have any of you been up on location at an oil rig before?
No.
No?
I haven't. This is Dave Dodd. I haven't been on an oil rig. I guess it's one of the most dangerous places to be.
What does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
I don't know.
I'm broadcasting from an oil rig tonight, and I want to bring up the discussion a little bit because I hail from the oil field, and I got a lot of company men out here that listen to this show. They're my listener base, and if you hear any background noise, there's a night company man across the way. But when you say it's the most dangerous place you could be, you know, that's the other point of this show, is dispelling the myth of the oil field. And I've been out here 4 years.
I don't mean it's dangerous in the fact that you have an oil rig. I'm talking about there are several jobs in this country which are dangerous. One I was in, which was foundry. The other would be steel mills. The guys that work in the lumber industry that, you know, do the harvesting of the trees and stuff like that. The guys that were in coal mining and the guys that are on the oil rigs. Those are the five really the most dangerous jobs in the country where people can get hurt really bad really quickly. And that's why I said the way
I've been living out in this oil field for 4 years. I'm up at an oil rig 7 days out of the week, 365 days out of the year. We are very heavily regulated, and we run more efficient and safe than we ever have. And I just wanted to make a break and say hi to my company men. That there's a bunch of them that I told them to listen to the show tonight, and we are having a very good discussion. I'm just happen to be sitting here staring out at the rig that I call home all the time, and I just wanted to break it up for a second, take a little bit of a breather. Chuck, thank you for joining tonight. When Joe called me to tell me about this gentleman wanting to talk about his book, I said, call Chuck in because this is over my head. I never claim to know more than what I know, and I'm just appreciative, Chuck, that you're here tonight. And thank you, Dave, for coming in and talking about your theory and your book.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you too. I really do.
Well, I would like to stop a minute. Can we stop just a minute? Do a little bit of intro, including the young man. I'm assuming he's younger than I am by his voice, who has called to chime in as intros. Is to me, it's really important that we don't just talk, you know, once in a while on the radio, that when we meet somebody on these platforms, that we continue these relationships, that we talk to each other.
Yeah.
That's what's missing in America. If we have disagreements, you know, on air, hey, cool. You know, let's talk about them more and then duplicate it on this show again, my shows. I've got a couple of platforms running now. And find new voices like this young man who has called in, who I want to make sure I can get him to get a hold of me, who are well-spoken, who know the subject matter, and are willing to have open and honest debates without ranting and foaming at the mouth, so to speak.
I completely agree. And the gentleman from Pennsylvania, actually, I got to tell you guys, he was on hold just listening to the show, and then he dropped off. And I put the show on hold and mute, and I called the young man. He's from Pennsylvania, and he told me he was just randomly listening, but he was now listening on his computer. So he said, I have a question if you'll ask them. And I had to explain to him. I said, I'm actually Bella D'Angelo. And he said, oh. And I said, if you have a question, will you call back in? So he did, and he has since dropped off. But I completely agree. We, you know, and that's why I jumped in about talking about where I'm at. A lot of people don't understand or know who I am. They just kind of get excited and sometimes call into a radio show, and yet we've got a large audience out here in this oil field. There's 180-some active rigs out here. We have 50 to 60, 70-some thousand people that work out here. When they go on their 2 weeks off, they go all over the country, all over the world, but they tune in here, and that's why I want people to know and understand where I am, because I've got a big listening audience out here, And if you think that we, you know, that we don't know much about what's going on in the world, or we're kind of ignorant, which is what a lot of the country would like most of the people to believe who we are out here, you need to understand this is some of the most passionate, patriotic, hardworking, red-blooded, family Christian men that are working very hard and love this country and couldn't be more concerned about what is going on in this country and the world, but primarily what it is that's going on in this country and how the rest of the world, you know, we've lost respect. We've got an administration in place that is completely, you know, we just throw our hands up in the air and walk around, and that's what today when I was out at the rigs and talking about the fact that we have absolutely no leadership. And quite honestly, a lot of us believe Putin would be a better leader than the current one we have in place.
Well, you know, you bring it to kind of something I'd never really thought about. Okay, if you have a big listenership that's in the oil field business, are you willing to travel? I mean, they've locked down the natural resources in our own country where we can't access them, thereby making us oil dependent.
In all fairness, even when we ask questions, I'd be able to answer, are we willing to travel? That's all they've done in their whole lives in the oil field is you move about when one place shuts down. You have to. I mean, I moved out here because of what happened when this administration came into play. I knew that this country was going to be really hurting for jobs. And so I said to myself, self, if you're going to reinvent yourself, go somewhere where you know you're going to have a job for a while. Because I've worked since I was 13, and I'm not comfortable not working. And so when I told myself to go in the oil field, I said, not only are you going to go in the oil field into sales, because that's all I've done, but I'm going to go into production if I can't sell, and then I'm going to travel and go to other countries if I need to. Because once I got out here, I realized that's what they do in this oil field. They travel all over the world.
Okay, good. You made my point. Now, they've locked down the natural resources of the greatest part of the United States so that we cannot access them here. Now, if we turn around, these men who are in the oil field, their profession is to drill for oil. I don't care if it's for a Chinese company, a Russian company, whoever's going to hire a man and give him a job, you know, so that he can produce. If you're being strangled by your own government in your industry, what's with waving the flag if a Russian company says, hey, we need you to come over here, we got this oil field, and you have the technology and the wherewithal to do it and bid the job? I'll go to work for a Russian in a minute. His money's as good as anybody else's. I have the skills.
When you ask the question if you're willing to travel, you must have had a perception
right. That
we don't travel.
Oh no. Oh no.
The second point is that we're here in North Dakota where we are not strangle-held. We're the number one U.S. is now the number one producer of oil. And North Dakota has the boom going on because we have very little intervention of the federal government. This is private land with private companies.
Mm. What about Anwar?
Okay.
Is anybody drilling in Anwar? Did we lose our host? That happens periodically.
No, I guess we did, yeah.
No, I'm here.
I know one thing. There's two brand-new coal-fired power plants in Texas that meet every EPA standard you can come up with, and Obama personally will not let them go online and instead is punishing the citizens of Texas by making them pay higher electrical energy costs by buying the energy out of state.
Well, of course. That's one of his agendas.
Yeah.
And the
yes.
whole reason that this show has taken off with as much popularity and support is because there's nobody, you know, the rest of the country would like you to not understand and know what it's like to still live in a state that has economy, that has industry, and does not rely on the federal government. They do not want you to know what capitalism, entrepreneurialism, 1-3% unemployment. We have more jobs than we have people. We have infrastructure still coming in. And drill, baby, drill. I mean, this is where, you know, as we talk about all the time, we're not hurting here. But the rest of the country wouldn't want you to know what it's like and what we're doing here. And that's why, you know, my mission is to, besides dispel the myths and the conspiracy theory and everything else that goes on in this country, but what's going on in this country, but spreading the truth, having real conversation, real dialogue, getting people to tune in that don't normally tune in to conservative talk radio, which tonight was great. I had two random callers, one from Minnesota, one from Pennsylvania, calling into the program, get people involved, because we've got a big job ahead of us in 2014. We have a huge boulder to push uphill to slow down the purposeful dismantling that's happening to this country. But at the same time, I go out in my day, I work all day long in the oil field. I have a business. I'm very honored and blessed to have what I have at a time in this country when it's tough to even get a job. I have four jobs, you guys. I have two of my own businesses and then a couple of sales jobs. And then I come in at night, and I'm still sitting in the steel toe booth with my Carhartt on, sitting here at the oil rig. Be blessed to have a great conversation tonight and spreading the word about the great things happening here in North Dakota and the great people here.
Bella, I'm going to ask you to return the favor and ask you to come on one of my platforms, either on Panda Radio, which is People Against the NDAA, the organization's radio where I host that on Sundays, or on We Resisters, and bring to that point that one of the most successful states we have in the nation right now is a state that has pretty much told the feds, get out of our face.
Well,
you know, I'm going to ask you to return the favor and make a good show.
I would love to come on your show, and I told Joe that I wanted to ask if you wanted to come on a regular spot on my show, because I enjoyed you from the first time that you called in, and I'm enjoying this discussion. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It's all about getting back to, you know, the lost art of having good conversation, which, you know, that's one of the things that attracted me when I first started coming here to North Dakota, because being back in Minneapolis, nobody was honest, sincere, and direct. And if you had different opinions, all they ended up, like we talked about earlier, they were heated, emotional debates, and you couldn't really get your point across. Well, if you've never been to North Dakota, if you've never been to the oil field, that's why I asked you guys. Because when you come out here, I want to tell you, I met three separate company men today. I'd never seen them before, never walked in their rig before, and from the moment I opened their door, I was instantly welcomed in, given a chair, asked if I wanted a water or coffee. They told me their whole life story within 5 minutes. I shared a bit about mine. And you would think that we were lifelong friends. But that's what the oil field is. It's a small circle of family, and we all have each other's back. And if this play goes down, we all find each other at the next play. So it's a great place, and they've given me so much support, and that's why I speak of them so highly, because they're also the largest listenership of this radio show until we hit syndication, which, Chuck, can you believe it? I am a week and a show away from hitting syndication with Salem.
I wish you a lot of success. Now we just got to get your chat room up. And a few editing skills so that you can throw in some fun stuff. Would you like to hear something I put together tonight as a fun piece for a show tonight that's airing now, as a matter of fact, about Crimera? We decided to do a kind of a skit, and we put Obama and Putin together in Crimera. And it's only about, I don't know, 4 minutes long. It's called Chopper Chuck, you know, and his magic helicopter. One of the guys came up with this idea that just started the show. And I think it's kind of fun. Hold on, let me see if I can find the darn thing.
Well, and while you're looking for that, Chuck, actually, when Salem picks me up, and I was explaining this too earlier today, when Salem picks me up, they're producing the show. And what's going to happen is they will be handling all of the pre-screen, all of the guests, all the phone calls. It'll operate like a real professional radio show, finally. So you won't have to teach...
watch out for strings, darling. Watch out for strings. They will not want me on. Ooh, if you're talking about, here's a problem I run into. I had a fellow that, you know, just loved what I was saying, you know, and he was all into, okay, you know, yeah, I'll help you, because, frankly, I'm selling my silver to do this for, well, I've been for several months now. I've given myself 6 months to do this for my country, last hoorah, so to speak. When I decide I've spent enough of my silver so I don't have to work to do this, then I'll have to go back to work and y'all are on your own if I don't do something. I'm not good at marketing. I don't monetize anything. Had a backer. He was like, yeah, what you're saying? Until I ran afoul of Ron Paul with him. I had a disagreement on Ron Paul. And it's like, well, you can't be saying that. Excuse me. Goodbye. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Always watch out for that. Don't if they stifle open debate, honest debate, if people are honest and sincere, but there's an opinion that they don't want to hear, that will... Well, it may not destroy you, but it'll destroy your credibility.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because with money comes control.
Salem Communications is the largest conservative Christian-based media.
Ooh.
They have been working
Ask them this. You know of a Catholic and a Muslim who have a radio show together, and you want to have them on to talk about their show. A Muslim, a Catholic, and an atheist. I call myself an atheist. I'm not, but because I want to keep my spirituality completely out of the question, so I take the atheist point of view on air. See what they say.
This is what astounds me, and it really does blow me away. I've had this show for 4 years. I've been working with Salem Communications for 9 months. You know, at this point in the game, for as vested in as I am, do you think I didn't rattle them with every question possible? Do you think they haven't researched me and really understand who I am and what I believe? I mean, you know, I wouldn't be a week and a day away, you know, and when I went back to Salem, and so, you know, no, this isn't, you know, Glad to hear it.
Well, if they're honest
you.
And
I mean,
open, that's great.
Thing. Here's the thing. I'm very direct, to the point that some people can't handle it. But, you know, if you know me, if you've met me face-to-face, if you sat up at a rig with me, you know that I'm basically a roughneck at heart. I'm a tomboy. And in order to be a single girl on her own in the oil field, you got to be pretty tough. But I earned the respect by these company men because of my views of this country and the world. And when Salem met me, they said that they believed in my story, who I am, what I believe, the reputation I have here in the oil field. And so that's why when Joe connects with people, he asks people to listen to the show first, do a little research, read my bio, understand who I am. I'm not exactly just a girl in a skirt running around with a great marketing idea. I've earned my place standing next to, and I'm going to be ready when I'm alongside Rush and Hannity and Beck and all those guys, because I did my time calling into Hannity and to Dennis Miller. But I believe we have Larry. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Bella.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, I'm in the center of the cyclone again here in the nation's capital, the labyrinth of the land of liberals, and today's a different day here in Washington with the CPAC going on. You know, all the conservative political action conference going on, and it kind of makes me feel a little bit warmer, a little bit cozier.
Why?
Well, first of all, I know you love calling in here because at least you feel like you're part of a life raft where you can be with your like-minded friends, because I know you're on a island out there. But I was supposed to be at CPAC. I tell you what, they were begging me last week to just put everything together and beat feet to get out there, because, you know, I wanted to meet Trump and Cruz and the rest of them. And I mean, I've been wanting to talk to Trump for a long time, but, you know, when you work in the oil field, we run 24/7 out here, owning your own business. This oil field changes day to day, phone call to phone call. And, you know, today alone, I got a big job that I got to bid on this morning. I picked up a couple more rigs for cleaning. So as I told everybody, you know, I got to work. And in today's world and economy, you know, I got to do what's important in work. But I've got a couple of guys out there. Rick Trader is one of them from Conservative Commando Radio. He's out there. Brian from Liberty Drive. Larry, our good buddy, he's out there. And I can't wait to hear from them all because I know they're lining up some great, some of these great guys to come on our shows. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I heard from your boy Brian Lonergan tonight. I got a call from his cell on his way back from the CPAC, and he was, I guess, you know, he had goosebumps. He was so excited.
Well, we've had some lively conversation tonight. Dave, go ahead and give the name of your book again real quick.
It's called The Dragon Awakens, and it's on Amazon.com. I have one thing I'd like to run by you. It's a concept I call Obama foreign policy, if I could. It'd only take about 30 seconds. It has come to my attention that the NRA is actually taking a stand against the Russian invasion of Ukraine by supporting President Obama's idea of banning Russian roulette. On the downside, Lois Lerner, the former head of the IRS, was very upset at this decision. But the mayor of New York did the Russians, President one better by showing how upset he was by the Russian invasion of Ukraine by closing the Russian tea room. Our attorney general is calling for a ban on Russian vodka nationwide, and Secretary of Health and Human Services is calling all physicians to refer to all flu-like symptoms as having conducted a case of the Putins. Boy, when the Obama administration gets angry, you don't know how far they will go. Obama might just be so angry that he unfriend Putin on his Facebook page. That is all.
Do you write a blog? You ought to write a blog. I mean, that's good wit.
No, I got a Facebook page. I put it on my Facebook.
What's your Facebook page?
That's just David.dotsr senior.
I'm sorry. One more time. David
W period D-O-D-T space senior, S-R.
That's D-O-C-C?
No, D-O-D, Delta Oscar Delta Tango.
Thank you, military man, D-O-T-T.
Yeah, it's 4 years in the Navy.
Seven years in the Army.
Oh, God. Yeah. So anyway,
that's some good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that was witty. I mean,
somebody sent me bits and pieces of that, and I said it's almost funny, and then I took it and I worked around it and came up with what you just heard. So I'm glad you got a kick out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we're like that, you know, you write, you make a blog page and write blogs and put them out on Google Plus and have fun with people. You know, write something that's got biting humor that gets a rise out of people. Man, I get tired of being in a conch shell where everybody agrees with each other. Is anything more boring? Can anything be more boring than everybody agreeing with each other?
Oh yeah, I got Facebook. I'm on about 100 different groups, and they all send me Facebook emails. And they, you know, 80% of them are the same thing. You know, I just kind of get, so I just start deleting. But,
hey, Chuck, real quick, tell people where they can find your show.
Well, if you punch in Smith Fix, my name is Smith, and I fix things for a living.
Repeat
I'm a remodeler. Smith Fix, my last name is Smith, my name is Chuck Smith, S-M-I-T-H, and I fix things, so it's been Smith Fix forever. If you punch in Smith Fix on a Google search, you'll find me pretty quickly. I'm the host for Panda Radio, which is People Against the NDAA, which is a national organization. And then I've started another platform called We Resisters to resist all memes, all beliefs, faiths, trusts. We want to think. We want to talk. When you shut your mind down because you've already got your mind made up, there's kind of something wrong with that. That's why we are where we are today. That's why right now, live on another platform, on We Resistors, is a Christian and a Muslim. Boy, did I take a bunch of grief for actually having the nerve to talk to an American Muslim.
If you want, I can send you. I did a whole bunch of research on Islam. If you want me to, I can send it to you if you have a Facebook page.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, here's the thing, though. When you tell another man what his beliefs are, SmithFixBlog.com, where I pillory the Christians. I mean, am I going to be invited if all the Muslims believe what everyone says they believe, you're a Muslim, so you must believe this. Well, there's a branch of the Mormon church that believes that if you get reincarnated often enough and give enough money to the churches, you're going to get your whole planet to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, they claim to be Christians.
Gentlemen, when my show started 4 years ago, and then Larry, I'm going to have you give I know that you wanted to discuss something tonight too, so we'll kind of shift gears. But when I started my show 4 years ago here in Williston, North Dakota, I went down to Fort Worth, Texas for a month. There was a point in which I didn't think that I could handle staying up here. It was a completely foreign world until I started to really fit in and get to know people. But anyways, I went down to Fort Worth, Texas, and one afternoon on Facebook, because that's how I've been able to find the majority of the people that I'm so blessed to have be part of the show, but I got to know a gentleman, Bo was his name, from Denmark. And I was so honored that someone from outside of the country even wanted to talk to me and be interested in coming on my show. I mean, you got to understand, I'd had my radio show for only 4 weeks. I didn't have anybody helping me, mentor me, or tell me how I was doing it. I was just like I do everything. I have very high risk factor, and I'd been on Hannity 13 times, and I thought, I know how to do this. But anyways, I spent an afternoon talking to Bo from his home in Denmark. Could not believe what I was hearing happen to their country because of the large population of Muslims and the Islamification. What transpired from that point was a very long-term friendship and relationship with Bo, as well as several of his good friends that formed the Danish Defense League, which turned into the Danish Resistance. Well, they introduced me to some of their friends in the English Defense League. Some of my best friends are in the EDL, and what transformed from that point was I had a radio show that I hosted for a year and a half on Saturday afternoons. I believe so much in spreading the truth about Islamification and Sharia law that I would come in every day on Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and the guys from the EDL and the Danish Resistance, and we had our radio show, and we spread the truth. We had some of the most fun, along with spreading the truth and getting their message out, and also learning and understanding the perspective of what the other countries were viewing us as. Because if you listen to the rhetoric of what was being shoved down our throats from the administration of how much the rest of the world hated us, very much the contrary. How much concern, how much love of this country, how worried they were about what was going to happen here, because if it happens here, the rest fall because they look to us to defend them. And to this day, this show is listened to, and I speak to the guys over in England and Denmark, and I swear to them that one day when I get free, when I can leave, because I work every day, I want to go there and see them face-to-face and break bread and broadcast from there. But Larry, what did you want to talk about tonight? We got to switch gears before we run out of time with Jaws of Life here.
I'm telling you, you're chock full of talent. Everybody's great out there. I love it. I just wanted to basically give you the local lowdown on the CPAC and some of the highlights that happened today, as I heard from Brian, and as I've done some reading, as people have made comments on the internet about speeches, and I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the talking points that were made by both Chris Christie and Bobby Jindal, and there were a lot of interesting points.
Let me ask you real quick, who out of all of them, I'm just wondering, because Chris Christie got a standing ovation. I have my thoughts on Chris Christie, but what did you take away from his speech?
From Christy, what I took away from Chris Christie's speech was, survey says, that I personally think he's pretty much about holding seats, and I'm leaning more towards Ted Cruz and the others about actually making a difference, but I think that he's a very good tactician and politician. He made a very good non-teleprompter speech, and he was very well received and very well prepared.
Well, he's a politician, and I agree, but I... Go ahead.
In other words, he spewed Republican rhetoric.
Exactly.
Any, you know, just the rah-rah, we're going to make a difference, we're going to turn it around.
That's true.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Same old song and dance. Look
in the face of the camera and
a lie like crazy.
Look serious, yeah.
And just lie, yeah, just lie.
I mean, I could
on the other hand, I got a better...
Hey, guys, I could probably give you the overview of what all of them said. And when I was at the last rig tonight, it was up on the screen, and we turned the volume down, and, you know, we sat back and with our feet up, and, you know, we just talked and said, I mean, the bottom line is whoever gets the – unfortunately, we're up against the fight that we all agree that we've got the career politician Republicans that are the real criminals that are fighting against the Tea Party. And, first of all, let's lay out the lay of the land. So the liberal left has gone so far left that they make the Republicans actually be the old liberals of 20, 30 years ago, and then you have the Tea Party, who are the true conservative Republican for this country. The problem that we have is that on the right, we are so splintered that the Republicans are going to fight dirty pool as possible because they don't want to lose their seat against the Tea Party, who actually want to save this country. So when we're sitting back and we say, well, now we're splintered on the right, and what we're going to have to do, and I don't know how we're going to do this, but we went through this same problem, and it's going to persist, is that we're all so divided. You know, you've got the Ron Pauls, those that won't see or do anything outside of Ron Paul, and they're still, you know, convinced that all of his boats were destroyed. And yet what we're going to have to do is whoever gets the GOP nomination, we're going to somehow have to back them, and we're going to somehow have to bring our own two sides together, because this country cannot take, and everybody believes it's Hillary. I have mixed beliefs, but whoever gets the nomination on the liberal side, we've got to knock them out no matter what to stop and to start to sandbag the rest of the destruction that is going to happen to this country, because we can't afford another term with the liberals in charge, with the progressive liberals.
The problem I see is that you've got the Republicans who've been doing the same thing over and over again for decades, and they don't know how to do anything differently.
In real effect, there was not spitting difference between Romney and Obama in real effect of policy, of what really mattered, you know, to the rulers of this nation.
They didn't,
the financiers.
Yeah. I disagree.
The corporations and the
bankers.
I disagree on that.
Because first of all, I can't disagree
because they didn't really discuss that. They talked about a lot of things, but that wasn't one of the things they discussed. What they were going to do with the dollar, what they were going to do with this and that. You know, it was just rah, 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 both of them. I went to a couple of the rallies and for Romney, and he didn't say a whole heck of a lot. I watched Obama, and he didn't say anything.
Hey, I got to jump in, you guys.
Go ahead.
First of all, there's a couple differentiators. Romney is a citizen of the United States. True. Romney is not a Muslim.
No.
Wait, whoa. We need an entire program to discuss. You were talking about divisions. You were talking earlier about how we're divided. How is it that these countries all of a sudden have this influx of radical Muslims? How about you let them be imported to your country so that you divide your population? If your population is divided, they're easy to control.
That's true.
And then you finance and you aid the radicals, and then you do something stupid like our Justice Department say, oh, we're going to say you can't make any bad comments about Muslims, and you hate the Muslim because the Justice Department said that?
I don't hate...
While our Muslim community is saying, don't help us!
Chuck, I don't know if you know much. I mean, I just explained my whole year and a half of my good friends coming on the show talking
about what happened.
Yes, ma'am.
I will sit and discuss with both of you for a couple of hours, bring all your comers, and I will show you where you're blaming the Muslim for what's been done to vilify the Muslim.
No, what I am stating are some facts. Romney is a citizen of the United States.
Who isn't?
Barack Obama does not have, he is not a citizen of the United States. If
Barack Obama's
Muslim
father
up,
was John Marshall Davis, who's an American citizen. If it ever came to the head and they really got to fight, he would show his genetics and say, gee, here, my father was John Marshall Davis, a communist, but still an American citizen. So you wasted all of your time worrying about this other stuff and the fact that
you want to take those out, if you want to take those facts out, Romney actually cares about this country. Romney understood
he would
the
have signed the NDAA. He would have signed the National Defense Authorization Act, which is why one of the reasons I belong to PANDA.
You know, I'm going to do something right now that I should have done quite some time ago. It's, you know, the one thing that I will not do is get run over. And Larry, now it's just me and you. I muted these two guys, and I'm sorry, but Chuck and Dave, I got to have some respect here on this show. I mean, I find it amazing that the guys seem to still want to, I mean, you can't just run over me. I know what I know, and I know what I understand. I know that Romney does love this country. I met the man in person. I sat at a speech that he gave in Bloomington, Minnesota over 5 years ago. I also am close friends with a good friend of his who is fighting the career Rhino Republicans. And Romney is fighting against them as well. But when you come down to fundamental differences, and this is very important, if Romney would have come in, all of these massive agendas and the shoving through, yes, Romney care is similar of Obamacare, but nothing to the catastrophic level that Obamacare is. It is not the same bill. Romney would not have come in and spent all the stimulus money and shoved the rest of the economy and industry into the ditch. There are some very drastic changes, and the problem is people get Larry, I got to breathe for 1 second. Jump in for me for 1 second.
Okay, sure. I think you're worthy of not only respect but worthy of high praise for saying what's on your mind and saying it well and letting the people know that this is Bella and this is the way she thinks. And this is the way that many other people in the world think. And I take my hat off to you. You're coming from the Bakken out there. You're coming in from the heartland. You're coming in where people are still holding doors and saying, yes, ma'am. And, you know, they're still shaking hands as neighbors. They're not distancing themselves and plugging in their iPods and walking across the road and hoping nobody hits them. That's where I live. But you're in the heartland of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, and your hopes for not only an energy-sufficient, self-sufficient United States, but your hopes for a communication opening or, you know, closing of the abyss of the communication in this country and taking the action and the initiative that you have, I think it's more than respectable. It's just a great thing, and I take my hat off to you.
Well, thank you. You know, so many people ask me, how do I prepare for the show? Where do I get my ideas? Where do I get my viewpoints? Bottom line is I've been working since I was 13 years old. I've been in the sales industry up until I came out here in the oil field, my first couple of jobs were in sales. I sold drill bits, which is what got me up to the rigs. And what cemented my relationship immediately out in the oil field was that when I walked into the first oil rig and I see Dave and Chuck are still on there on mute and they're listening. And I just want you guys to listen for a second, because when I came out here, you know, when you look at my picture on Facebook, you can get the same perception that so many have if you haven't met me. And I fall to this preconceived notion my entire life. When God grants you looks, they don't often think that you are also granted with intellect. When you don't come with a poli-sci major or a media background, they instantly want to ask you, well, who's feeding your head full of this information? They can't possibly think that you have derived it all on your own. And when I came into my first oil rig, being that, you know, I've got my hair done up, I got makeup, I don't look like anybody that's supposed to be working out in the oil field. But when I walked in, I shook my first company man's hand, and he looked at me and he said, that's a grip. And I said, yeah. And then I told him, I said, you know what, I'm out here for a job. And I said, I'm never going to tell you what bit to put in the ground, but I'm going to show up every day on a regular basis. I'm honest, sincere, and direct, and I will never bullshit you. And then I turned my head, and I looked at that drilling screen, and I said, that's going to take me a long time. They knew I had been in the oil field before. I was just thankful to have a job. Then I turned my head again, and I saw Fox News up on the TV, and I looked at it, and I looked at the company man, and I said, what did he do to us today? And they instantly looked at me, and they said, honey, where are you from? And I said, Minneapolis, don't hold it against me. And then I said, you know, at the rate that they are imposing the agendas on this country, we're going to be lucky if we get out of this thing alive. And then I went into my rant about Obamacare, amnesty, cap and trade, finance reform, the global Illuminati. I can speak to all different levels, but the goal of this show is to break it down to the basics. And the basics are, this country is in trouble. Whatever your belief of every, as far-reaching as you want to, whether it was planned at Jekyll Island or not, the bottom line is that we have got an administration in place that has got nothing to do with bringing this country back, the economy back, or for the people, by the people, of the people. This is an administration that is hell-bent on the destruction and takeover and building of the socialist communist regime, which they are successfully doing by pumping up the 53% that are living off of the 47%. And no matter how you slice it or dice it, what we have to do is we have to get people that are listening and understanding and going out and getting people invigorated to get us out and vote, because the biggest job ahead of us is to get the people out of the seats in the Senate in November. And then what we have to do is we somehow, Larry, we have to pull ourselves together and get the masses together to somehow, wouldn't the whoever gets the GOP nomination, we have to get them in the seat in 2016.
And I think your earlier points, Bella, about the fracturing and the reassembling and the need for a contiguous, unified voice, they're all very well received by my ears, and I hope by many of your listeners as well, because the fracturing business is going to be detrimental. But if we get unified and we get organized and we get a solid cluster of voting people in the same mental mindset, why, I think that this change can happen.
Well, as I wrapped up with my last company man, and when we sat there and he said, you know, I just hope it's not too late, and I said, what we got to do is pray, and what we got to do is we got to talk to people. And the whole goal of this show is to get, you know, everyday people calling in and listening. And the problem that I have is when we get too far into high-level discussion like we did with Dave and Chuck and talking about far-reaching things, that, you know, the everyday hardworking person that's losing their jobs, that's getting more and more money taken out of their paycheck, that's losing their health insurance, that they come home and all they do is they sit and they listen to, you know, their neighbors and their friends and their family. And, you know, I shoes and say, they're sitting there going, where is this country headed? How come my investments aren't coming back? How come my house keeps losing value? How come I get more and more money taken out? How come when I go out to dinner now, instead of talking about the vacations we're taking and our investments and our portfolios growing and we're buying bigger houses and we're looking at huge opportunities, career opportunities for our kids, how come all we're talking about is how every day more and more people are losing their insurance, their hours are being cut back? You know, this isn't what this country was supposed to be looking like for economic recovery. This isn't what was sold to these people. And yet, as we sit here, you know, what we are enjoying today, we won't even be enjoying in another 5-10 years. If the accomplishment and what this administration has in store for this country, this will look like the American dream 10, 15, 20 years from now. And this isn't even what America was founded on and what this great country stood for. And so, you know, we got to just be real and break it down to what matters to the everyday American, because that's who we're fighting for, because honestly, neither party is, and it's us that can make the difference, because that's what, you know, 3% did in the first revolution. Now, I'm not suggesting a revolution. What I'm suggesting is people getting out and doing what I talk about all the time, which is you walk out your door and you go about your business, and whether you go to the gas station, grocery store, you know the drill, Larry, is to talk and remember the practice that is so lost, but it's here in the oil field, which is talking and being real and saying hey to your neighbor and saying, you know, are you seeing, well, what are you doing about it? Instead of sitting there fearful and screaming away on Facebook and complaining, what are you actually doing about it? And that's why I'm so blessed, because you, Donald Huber, Ben Gay III, you know, Joe Buttner, Joe is doing all of this work, all of this hard work, you know, all because he believes in the mission and the message. You know, Brian, Liberty Drive, Rick Trader, we're all in this together because we're power in numbers. And, you know, we can't give up. We haven't lost. We haven't lost. And as long as there is hope, you have to hold it in your head and spread it around, Larry.
I think that if you're listening to the show, you're already a winner, because you're listening and you're learning. And that's all those people you just mentioned. I'll bet you dollars to donuts they all say, I learned from the other guest, or I learned from that point of view, or I learned from Bella, I learned this. Well, you know, it's all about learning. If you don't learn and evolve and grow, and then you're a houseplant. You know, it's important to, you know, really expand and grow and get your view and your vision focused. So accumulating knowledge by other people's experiences, like yourself and your guests, is really a gift. And for people to turn away from a gift like that, it's their loss. So I am really all about staying tuned to your program, learning from your program, learning from you and your guests. And I think that, like you say, there's got to be a unification here for the next election. There's got to be a way of reaching out, not only in the grocery line or at the bus stop, but, you know, in the oil fields, in the corn fields, in the refineries, and, you know, every place.
You know, I know that these guys, just throw their hands up. And that's why I said to one of my company men, and that's why I got so heated when earlier, and I got to give a shout out to Jeff Bowen. Jeff Bowen, thank you for your service to this country. Jeff sent me a message on Facebook. He says, you were right, Bella. Our leaders are failing us. We need new leadership. Absolutely, and amen, and thank you for listening, and thank you for your service. And one of the things, first of all, earlier in the program, Larry, Chuck asked me when I told him I was getting syndicated. He said, well, have you asked them what you thought or what they thought if you had a Christian and a Muslim on your program? And my head just wanted to go on fire, because, you know, it's like, why am I answering to someone? And then I sit here and I go, really, you got to explain yourself? This person's on your show 2 times, and does he think that I'm that daft that I didn't make sure that they fully understood what they were signing up for by taking me to syndication. I mean, I have a hot head. I'm very direct. And I'm in the oil field. That's why I ask people all the time, have you been to the oil field? Do you know how we talk out here? I mean, I curse like one of the best roughnecks. I have to be more polished on my show. But we are the most passionate people in the world about this country. And then when I interrupted the guys at the top of the hour at 8 o'clock to ask them if they'd ever been up to an oil rig, you know what they said to me? They said, what does that do with the price of tea in China? And again, my head wanted to go on fire again because it's like, because this is my livelihood, guys. You know, I'm not just some girl that sits behind a computer all day long and either has some, you know, some simple job. I have a very complicated day. I'm very honored and very blessed, but I drive miles and miles and miles and miles and miles all day long. I rely on you and Brian and Joe and guys like Jeff Bowen and Ben and the rest of them. I've never met you face-to-face, but I rely on all of you to help pull this together, because what I do is I go out and I earn a living every day. I'm a self-sufficient, self-reliant girl. I don't rely on a man. I'm building my own empire. I'm planning my own retirement instead of crying and complaining about what won't be there for me by the time I do retire, if I ever retire. I love to work so much, I doubt I'll ever retire. I'm a workaholic, and I'm going to work as much as possible while I can with plans. That's why when then Dave Alco asked if we were willing to travel, and I thought, for the love of God, he knows nothing about the oil field. They've all traveled. That was the coolest thing, Larry, when I first got out here. You know, I lived a pretty sheltered life back in Minneapolis, and by the time I got out here and I got to meet these guys, and you hear these stories of where they have drilled in all kinds of places. You know, I was told a story once when a company man, his hands went into town. He was drilling down in Mexico. And his hands drank, and they got pulled over, and they got arrested. Well, what I listened to for the next hour, the reason the company man was telling me this story was because sometimes when I come into that company man's shack, I'm not as confident as they've seen me before. And then they ask me what's wrong, because I'm an open book. You can read me very quickly.
Sure.
And I told him that one day I'd gotten pretty scared. And he asked why. And I explained. I said, well, you know what? I said, the reality of being out here on my own comes too close to home some days. And I said, last night when I left Williston and I had to drive a long ways to get to my apartment, because housing, I mean, when you find inexpensive housing, you have to go with it. Well, I had a long drive that night, and in the middle of a very small town, I had to stop and put diesel on. And when I got back into my truck to continue my journey, there was a car that followed me behind me, and I switched lanes a couple times, and the car switched lanes with me. Well, I'm a very observant person, and obviously I've stayed safe because I'm aware of my surroundings. I took a couple of extra turns off of the highway. The car followed me again. This is unusual behavior for a car that, if you don't know them, they shouldn't be following your every maneuver. So then I had to try and call someone and find someone that would be within driving distance of me to potentially intercept or help me. Well, your mind goes into overdrive, especially one like mine that doesn't shut off. Well, nonetheless, by the time I made it home that night, I didn't sleep very well. And it made me wake up a couple times during the night to keep checking and whatnot, because a lot of unfortunate things do happen out here. And so I told him this, and he said to me, he said, well, and he told this story about his two hands that got arrested, and they were driven around in the Mexican police car tied to the back of this pickup while they were paraded around and laughed at while the Mexican police went in and had drinks. And basically made it well known that these two were not going to live to see their next day. The company man said he couldn't believe that his hands didn't die from the stress of that whole day of being paraded around. And he said by the time that those two hands were released at the end, of course, there wasn't much left to their minds and their souls that day. They were scared out of their minds, but they lived to see their next day. And when
Amen.
He was telling me that, amen. And when he finished telling me that, I looked at him and I said, I guess this place isn't as bad as I thought it was. I can survive this. And he just elevated me to, yes, he just elevated me to feeling a little bit stronger. By the time I walked out that day, I had another layer of Teflon on me. And that's the gift that the oil field and these company men do. I've just met that company man that day. And within that short period of time, he gave me the strength to carry on because they that's what we do out here. That's being family. And that's why I'm so adamant and I am so protective of these guys and why I want people to understand who we are, what we believe in, the tough jobs that we're doing, but the real, sincere, real people that we are. And to be able to have discussions like tonight, which they're very interesting, provoked a lot of different things, still made for a good show. I learned yet another thing again tonight, Larry. When somebody comes on and wants to talk about their book, I better know a little bit more by the time I have them on, because if Chuck wasn't available, I would have been over my head on this one tonight.
But, yeah, either that, or we're going to get Nature Boy Lonergan to pocket dial you. Oh, my goodness.
Bella. I hope he's having a hell of a time. He was so bummed that I couldn't make it out there. And, you know, I one of these days we're going to meet. You know, I tried dragging him out to North Dakota, but if nobody wants to come to North Dakota willingly, but you better because it's a great place. But we'll talk more. We've run out of time, but let me just ask you this. Who impressed you the most from CPAC?
Bobby Jindal. I love Bobby Jindal. Well, first of all, he's not only a politician, but he's got a sense of humor, and he's got a great delivery. And he said Obama has proven him wrong that Jimmy Carter, he said Jimmy Carter was the worst president of his lifetime. And now he says, I've got to go back on that and apologize to President Carter. I want to issue a sincere apology. It's no longer fair to say that he was the worst president of this great country in my lifetime. President Obama has proven me wrong. And I thought that was great. When I heard that, and you know, I said, obviously he was pointing out that he didn't seem to respect the Bill of Rights. And, you know, he said, if I was Obama, I'd consider suing Harvard Law School to get his money back because I'm not sure what he learned in 3 years. I mean, this guy's great, Bobby Jindal, and he's a, you know, he's been on the radar ever since Katrina and all that, and I think he's putting some new juice out there, new vibe for people who are just getting involved in political talk and political re-education and things of that nature. So I loved him.
Well, you know what I really love, and I was saying this within the last couple of weeks, Joe Buttner, Brian have blood, great, you know, non-political people that are running for big seats. And what it tells me, and this is what Donald Huber said the other night, that, you know, across the board, when we start talking about being the alternative conservative, we've got a country that's ready to start voting in non-political figures, and we've got some business people and non-politicians that are starting to go after big seats. And you know, we got to support these guys, and they're going to continue coming on our show, talking about their campaign progress as we help and support them to get the big job done in November. And can you believe we have already run up to the, what Jeff Bowen says, it is a safe bet to say that Obama will be the worst president in history, centuries to come. Yes, and by the time we figure out everything that he did and try to undo it, it's going to take some time. But Jeff Bowen, thanks for checking in tonight. Larry, thanks for joining us. I look forward to having
you on. My pleasure, as always.
Signed on a regular I think you've signed on a regular basis.
Well, I'm honored. You know, I love chatting with you. I love learning from you. I love hearing from your guests, and I love to just get involved in the mix. I think it's important. Discussion and knowledge is power.
Absolutely. Amen. And I'm going to take it from here, Larry, and everybody listening, go out tomorrow, do the right thing. talk to everybody. Get people involved. Get them inspired. Get them motivated. And if you yourself are motivated and inspired and happy and positive, rubs off, trust me, far more than the gloom's doomsday and, you know, ready to dig the ditch and jump in, because we're not over yet and we can't quit. We can never, ever, ever quit. Winston Churchill. Let's say goodnight. God bless. God bless America. And, boys, my company men, I'm out in full force tomorrow. See you till then.
Bye-bye.
Muslim majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey changey stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.